And now, after a year when we're all taking stock of debt, a look at what the government owes. After all the deficit spending this year in an attempt to revive the economy, the U.S. public debt tops $12 trillion. Today, it's hovering around 12.1. Yes, that's 12 with 12 zeros after it. Now, anyone who's ever had a credit card balance shivers to think of just the interest payments, and there are plenty of economic experts who worry about the debt. Dean Baker is not among them. We'll hear his explanation of the public debt and his opinion about what it all means in just a moment. If you have questions about the public debt, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Dean Baker is an economist and co-director of the Washington-based Center for Economic and Policy Research, and he's been kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A today. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me on.
And first of all, how big is $12 trillion?
Well, it's about two-thirds of GDP, about 70% of GDP, which is large, but it's important to keep in mind how large can the debt be. We had a debt that was over 100% of GDP after World War II. You have countries like Japan that has a debt of 150, 160% of GDP. So what matters here is how large is it relative to the size of the economy. At some point, clearly it does become too large. We do have to worry people will question the credit of the United States. But given the fact that we've had larger debts in times past, we have other countries with much larger debts that could still borrow easily in international credit markets, there's little cause for concern anytime soon. That doesn't mean we could spend as much as we want. We never have to worry about anything. We're just not near that point.
You mentioned Japan is one of the has a greater proportion of ratio of debt to GDP than we do. They're also one of our biggest creditors.
They're one of our biggest creditors. That's right. I mean, it's important to keep in mind. A lot of people are running around talking about the foreign debt. I know there's this ad I see all the time. I don't know who's running it, but they keep talking about our debt burden, half of it's owned by foreigners. Well, if we're concerned about what we're borrowing from foreigners, let's have a discussion about the trade deficit. That's how you get loans from foreigners. And that's really a totally separate issue. Again, important one, arguably, but that's not the budget deficit. So, you know, in terms of where are we borrowing the money, insofar as we're worried we're borrowing from foreigners, let's talk about the value of the dollar, which is the main factor determining the trade deficit. That's not the budget deficit. Totally different set of issues.
Well, the trade deficit and the budget deficit, but nevertheless, Japanese banks are indeed some of the biggest holders of U.S. credit.
Yeah, but let me just make the point more clearly. Suppose we had the exact same trade deficit, we were running a balanced budget, and we're not all celebrating that.
Right.
We'd still be borrowing the money from Japan, but instead of buying government debt, they would be buying up shares of private corporations, private debt. And any day they wanted, they could sell those and buy government debt. So if our concern is that Japan has control over the U.S. economy, again, that's a question about the trade deficit. We could have that discussion. That's not the budget deficit.
Well, the same thing with China. China holds
the exact same story. Again,
exact same China story. And the two economies, and indeed Japan's as well, are very closely linked. We're their customers.
That's right. And you know, there's a symbiosis that has very undesirable side effects, I think. And again, it's not the budget deficit. The point is that they've, particularly China here, but Japan has done this to some extent also, they quite deliberately prop up the dollar against their currencies in order to preserve their export markets in the United States. That's been a very effective development strategy for China, but it's had the effect of undermining manufacturing in the United States. And I have to imagine at some point China's going to stop doing this, and that's going to be painful. But again, this is not a story about the budget deficit. It's a story about the trade deficit.
Okay. But the fact remains that isn't U.S. policy somehow constrained by the fact that China owns trillions of dollars of U.S. debt?
Well, it may or may not be. You get this sort of odd situation where ostensibly, you know, President Obama and President Bush before him were yelling at the Chinese leadership saying, look, we want you to stop propping up our currency. Well, how do they prop up our currency? They buy government bonds. So it's a little bit silly. You know, supposedly we're saying we can't press them too hard on this because they'll stop buying government bonds. Well, isn't that what we want them to do? That's what I want them to do. So I'm not really worried about that.
But aren't we also telling them, look, your currency is not valued correctly. You need to adjust that.
Absolutely. The two are related because what we care about is their currency relative to our currency.
Right.
And the way they keep their currency down is they take all their earnings, their surplus, they have a huge trade surplus, they take their earnings and they use a very large portion of that to buy up U.S. dollar assets, not just government bonds, but U.S. dollar assets. And in principle, if we say we want you to raise the value of your currency, what we mean by that is we want you to stop buying U.S. assets, including bonds. So we're ostensibly, we get this absurd story, we're saying, what are we asking them to do? When President Obama is in a room with them, is he saying, I want you to keep buying bonds, I want you to keep the dollar overvalued against your currency, or your currency undervalued, if you like? Or is he saying, no, stop doing that, we need to get the dollar down? Those are directly contradictory, and somehow we have people saying he's doing both. I don't believe that.
Let's, Gabe, we get some callers in on this conversation. We're talking with Dean Baker, an economist, about the national debt, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And Henry's on the line from Philadelphia.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I have a question for the economist. When Volcker raised rates in the 80s above 20%, those were real returns. When people bought a Treasury debt security, they got real returns above the rate of inflation. And I'm worried that we'll never be able to get back to that high rates of return again on our debt because the government won't want to raise rates that fast to outpace inflation now that our debt is owned by foreigners and our debt is increasingly short-term securities.
Paul Volcker, he's referring to the former Secretary of the Treasury.
Of course. Well, very good question. Actually, usually economists think of us as trying to keep interest rates on government debt down. So the idea is that, you know, in general, one could quarrel with this, but the idea is usually we want low interest on government debt. We'd rather see people make money by investing in private assets. The idea being that if people put their money into Microsoft stock or Verizon or startup companies, that will create capital for the economy to grow. So in a lot of ways, economic policy is typically directed towards the idea of having low interest on government debt. That's usually what we strive for. And right now, of course, it is very, very low. It's just a 3.5% interest rate on 10-year bonds, near post-war lows.
Henry, thank you. The interest, though, I can't do the calculation that quickly in my head, but 3.5% on $12 trillion, just in debt service every year, that's a lot of money.
Well, it is. But again, the important thing is how large is it relative to the size of the economy? It's about 2% of GDP. That's not trivial, but it's somewhere around 3.5% of GDP back in 92, 93, when we had, again, a high interest burden and also high interest rates. So we're starting out with a relatively low interest burden, at least compared to where we've been. Now, of course, it'd be wonderful if it were zero, but, you know, the world doesn't work that way. So, you know, if people compare, wouldn't it be nice to pay zero interest? Of course, you know, if we had, I'd rather not pay my mortgage, too, but that's not the way the world works.
Well, back in the early 90s, it looked as impossible as it does now. And nevertheless, over the course of those boom years in the 90s, the budget deficit was eliminated, and indeed the federal debt, as instead of growing all the time, began to shrink.
Exactly. And I think that's really the point we have to keep in mind. We have the experience of the 90s, or we could look back to the early post-war years from the end of World War II until 1980, when the debt-to-GDP ratio fell from 110% of GDP in, just after World War II to about 30% back in 1980. And the way we did that was with good economic growth. So the point is, if you get the economy growing, one, you'll get the deficits down. We actually got to surpluses at the end of the Clinton years. But more importantly, you'll raise that denominator. You raise the size of GDP, so the debt burden isn't that great. And just, you know, give another story. If I owe $1 million, that's a big deal. On the other hand, if I'm Bill Gates and I owe $1 million, so what?
In other words, if any individual owes $1 million, I get your point.
If the economy grows a lot.
If the economy grows, you can grow your way out of the debt
problem. Exactly.
And in fact, it's happened in the past. Let's see if we can get another caller in. And let's go to Eric. Eric in Portland.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question if the comparison with World War II and indeed with the 90s isn't not disingenuous, but just not as accurate in that there was an end point. The end point in World War II, of course, the end of spending when the war was over. The end point in the Clinton years were the radical cutbacks in spending that accompanied the boom. What is the current end game plan to stop spending now? That's what I don't hear, the spiral.
What I'm
concerned about more than anything.
Okay, well, we have to be careful how we got here. So we're in a situation where we had a somewhat higher deficit than, you know, at least I would consider desirable. I think most economists would consider desirable in the years until this economic collapse, till we hit the recession in 2007, and then economy really fell through the floor last year. That would have required doing some, I think, relatively minor measures. suddenly we got a much, much bigger debt, over $1 trillion for fiscal year 2009 and very close to that for fiscal 2010. That's because of the downturn. We had huge write-offs associated with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, some additional money with the TARP. These are one-time events. Now, if we get the economy growing again and get back towards more normal levels of unemployment, our deficits will be back towards sustainable levels. Now,
in other words, because the more people will be working and paying taxes, and the government income will be greater.
Exactly. And on the other side, we're paying out money in unemployment benefits, food stamps, all these other payments that are associated with unemployment. So if we got the economy back towards normal levels of operation, full employment, we would largely get the deficit under control. Now, over the long term, I have to say, there is an issue with health care. And, you know, President Obama's talked about that. The health care proposal is supposed to at least in part fix that. We'll have to come back to it, I'm sure. That's the big story for the long term. But for the time being, if we can get the economy back close to full employment, I think we'll have deficits we could live with for some time.
Thanks very much, Eric.
Thank you.
Why is we keep hearing, obviously, the state governments are having exactly the same problems, much less income, and they're spending a lot on those unemployment benefits and other things, too. Yet they, for the most part, they have to run a balanced budget.
Well, they do, and they've had enormous problems with that. You have a lot of states that are laying off school teachers, in some cases firefighters, essential personnel. In many states, they're raising taxes, the last thing on earth you want to do in the middle of a downturn. So, I mean, if we were to impose that policy on the federal government, we would see a much worse downturn today. So maybe we'd all be really happy. We could say we have a balanced budget, but we might have 15% unemployment.
We're talking with Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, and he's telling us why the $12 trillion debt, not to worry, or not to worry so much. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Bruce. Bruce with us from Golden in Colorado.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have to disagree with Mr. Baker's analysis for this reason. I don't disagree that this may be a lesser percentage of GDP than we've seen in the past, but there are two problems to this. Number one, there is no trend toward correcting the problem. We are simply getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in debt. The Clinton balanced budget event that occurred for a year or two was an aberration based upon relatively recent history. Number two, when you start talking about a percentage of GDP, the only way you pay this debt off, and in particular what we're doing is only paying interest payments, is by raising taxes. And yes, you expand the economy, that would generate tax revenues, but the bottom line is the cost is going up. And ultimately, we're going to get to a point where we can't pay the bill.
Okay, well, taking those points in turn, first off, we actually were on a trend that wasn't that bad even prior to this downturn. So President Bush had his tax cuts. We had the cost of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is very large. We had a huge increase in defense spending over the course of this decade, which often goes unmentioned, but that is a very big factor contributing to the deficits. But on top of that, if you just look further back, in fact, most of the post-war period, the ratio of the debt to GDP was coming down. So it really, from 45 until 1980, the debt to GDP ratio was coming down. It started to rise rapidly in the Reagan years, and then when President Clinton came into office in 92, 93, it again began to come down. So actually, the history has been exactly as I'm saying. For the most part, the debt was becoming more manageable through time, not less manageable. So I'm really not worried. Remember, we don't ever have to pay it off. I mean, politically, someone may get out there and say, we're going to pay it off. There's no reason economically we have to do so.
We never have to pay it off?
We never have to pay it off. You know, think of a big
company. China gets into a big problem and says, wait a minute, we've got all this paper here. We want our trillions back.
Well, the other people are willing to buy it. I mean, we can look at what the markets say. They're willing to hold 10-year debt at 3.5%. You know, so they're not worried about it. And, you know, if you look at a big company, you look at a Verizon, a General Electric, they're more in debt today than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago. They'll probably be more in debt 10 years from now. The idea is that they're growing. And if the CEO of General Electric were to come to his shareholders and say, you know, we had a real bad year, we lost a lot of money, but I paid off the debt, he'd be fired in a second.
Bruce, thanks.
Address the second point I made?
The second point was, quickly?
Which is, the cost is getting larger and larger. We're only paying interest, and the only way to do that is either expanding the economy, which is not on the near horizon, or raising taxes, essentially raising revenue.
Well, again, as the deficits are projected to shrink, and they're projected to stay more or less constant relative to GDP. They rise a little bit over the next decade once we get through this immediate period where we have very high unemployment. And the economy is growing, by the way. So I've never been an optimist about the economy, but I do expect it to grow, and I think just about every economist does as well.
Bruce, thanks very much. An email from Sally in Grand Rapids. Can you explain how the Federal Reserve loans the government money? I have a relative who insists the federal government is paying billions of dollars in interest to the Federal Reserve. They also say the Federal Reserve is a private company making billions off the U.S. taxpayer.
Well, the Federal Reserve's, it's an interest, Andy. It's essentially a public agency. There are some complications because the banks actually do have a lot of control over the Fed. So it's sort of this public-private. But for practical purposes, I think it's best to think of it as a public central bank. And the way they lend the government money is they do it, and we joke about this, the old-fashioned way, they print it. So the Federal Reserve essentially has the authority to print money, and they could simply buy up government bonds based on their own credit. So that's, in fact, what they do. And if we turn to the case of Japan, where I was talking about they have a debt of 160% of GDP, much of that is actually owned by their central bank. So they're, in effect, printing money and using that to buy debt from bonds from the government, which, again, you might say, well, they're just making it up. But the fact is, people are happy to hold, you know, I was saying in the United States, they pay 3.5% interest, a very low interest rate. In Japan, it's just 1.5%. So no one's apparently fearful that Japan's going to have runaway inflation. They won't be able to meet their bills. Doesn't mean that will never be true, but they're obviously not near that point right now.
And let's see if we can squeeze in David. David, we just have a little bit of time there in Minneapolis. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I too am dismayed, and I think you're missing the forest for the trees by not talking about what the money is spent on. The money is borrowed, but will it bring economic return, or are we studying frogs in San Francisco Bay and waging wars in other countries?
Very good question. I mean, again, we always have to ask that. Even if we had a budget surplus, we should ask where our money's going. But, you know, the raising frogs, I'll just say about this. I mean, you have a lot of politicians. I know John McCain ran around the country talking about the Woodstock Museum. Maybe that's a waste of money, but that was $1 million. You couldn't find that in the federal budget. It's such a small amount of money. So you get a lot of examples that maybe they're bad, maybe they're good, but they don't amount to a hill of beans. If you want to know where the money is, it's a relatively small number of programs. It's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and defense. You know, there's a few others, but that's really the largest share of the budget. So if we want to say, well, we're really overspending, we're doing things that are bad or wasteful, look at those areas and you have to decide. I mean, I can tell you what I think of those programs, but you don't care. The point is, if you want to say we're spending too much money, look at those four programs. That's where it is.
David, thanks very much. And we need to thank Dean Baker for his time. We appreciate you coming in and help us explain this.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Dean Baker, an economist and co-director of the Washington-based Center for Economic and Policy Research. You can find a link to his blog, Beat the Press. I don't like that. At our website at tomorrow. Political junkie Ken Rudin has a holiday gift for us, a new trivia question, and of course we'll look at the stocking full of presents politicians left for us this past year in politics. Join us then. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.